I think the most challenging things that we have to do is really get a solid GMP on the projects, because we're exercising our ability to execute at a very, very rapid pace. And that's important to communities, especially now when construction costs is escalating in excess of inflation.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Today, we have an amazing guest, Dee Brown. Dee has tremendous experience as a developer in the public-private partnership realm. Dee, thanks for being on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Awesome. So everybody, Dee Brown is the president and CEO of the P3 Group, the nation's largest minority-owned public-private partnership real estate developer. Dee is also the host of The Sky's the Limit, quote, Beyond the Deal, which is produced by Forbes Books. So check out his podcast. It's going to be awesome. He's already told me something about it. Dee, I'm just so excited for you to share with the listeners something that I find to be just such an important topic. So tell us, how did you get into the world of public-private partnerships to start?
Sure. Sort of a long story, almost 30-year journey, 28 years in August. I started out in the real estate business as a real estate salesperson, transitioned to a real estate investor, buying and selling residential real estate, rolled into commercial real estate. Then after 2008, when the markets crashed, I decided to get into highway, street, and bridge construction because there was so much money being poured into public infrastructure after the Great Recession. And so after being successful on a number of projects, from airports to highways to bridges, et cetera, I was approached by the Army Corps of Engineers to begin to do these public-private partnerships with them on heavy equipment. My success within that area led to me receiving contracts with the nuclear facility over in Goose Creek, South Carolina, which is a nuclear naval facility. And I did some significant public-private partnership work with them, but all centered around heavy equipment, marine equipment, et cetera. And after I kind of got a taste of the public-private partnership arena, I said, well, let me kind of merge my real estate knowledge and construction knowledge to get back into doing these P3s where we can actually provide value to the government with an emphasis on trying to deliver very, very essential infrastructure and facilities to underserved communities.
Okay. Thank you so much for that introduction. Can you tell the listeners what is a P3 partnership? A public-private partnership.
Sure. And so P3 actually stands for public-private partnership. And a public-private partnership is actually an agreement between a public agency, some unit of the government, and a private sector company, whereby certain risks are transferred from the public sector to the private sector in a manner that is in the best interest of the government. And so typically those risk transfers include the transfer of construction risk, execution risk, the transfer of the risk of cost increases for materials and supplies related to the project. And so the government has found that these partnerships, when structured correctly, can deliver very, very high value to the local community.
Okay, excellent. And so you touched on some of the advantages of a public-private partnership. The risk is transferred from the community to the private sector?
Yes. And so I'll give you an example. So under our P3 model, when we go to a community and we partner with them to deliver facilities or infrastructure, we provide a complete design, build, finance solution. So typically, when a municipality wants to execute a construction project, they have to hire engineers, they have to hire architects, and they typically spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, just in the planning stage to get the project ready for development. So under our model, we cover all those costs. So whether it's engineering, architectural, environmentals, whether it is surveys, geotechnical, site acquisitions, anything that's required to execute that development, we shoulder those costs for the government. And then in addition to that, we develop a what we call a GMP, which is gross maximum price. And we enter into an agreement with the government saying that we're going to build this project on time, on budget, and we do not do change orders. So that prevents the government from getting into a situation where, which they're in all the time on the traditional delivery method, where they estimate that a project is going to cost, say, $3 million, for example. And then when they go to the bid market, they find out that the project is going to be $5 million to execute. And so the reason that we do not end up in that situation is because we're vertically integrated, meaning that we have our engineers, architects, general contractors, everybody working in tandem with each other so that we actually do a design assist that allow the GC, general contractor, and the architects and engineers to work hand in hand on the design so that we can maintain the budget, because now the architect and engineers are getting real-time market feedback on the design decisions that they're making. Under the traditional method that's been used, you know, forever, that interaction does not exist. So the first time you get market feedback on that design is when you put it out to bid and find out that it's over budget.
Makes a lot of sense. So just so that the listeners have an idea of what kinds of projects you're talking about, can you give us the range of types of projects that your firm is currently constructing and designing?
No, absolutely. So in the area of public-private partnerships, we don't do, I guess, what we would call the sexy projects, right? That a lot of people think about, real estate developers, hotels, and we do, well, we actually do hotels. We actually do conference centers. We do fire stations, police stations, courthouses, health units, educational facilities, including student housing, K-12 schools. We're doing college live and learn centers, student unions on college campuses, student housing on college campuses. So anything that is essential to the government, we can provide it. And that's including, you know, infrastructure.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much for, so I know you're in Nashville, but your firm works nationally or in the Southeast. Can you give us an idea of how far your reach is?
Sure. So we're actually in Memphis, which is not far from Nashville, by the way. But
oh,
so
sorry.
No problem. We're headquartered in Memphis, and we have actually 10 offices. 9 of the offices are within the continental United States. And we have one office in Nassau, Bahamas, and we are working on opening an office in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. And so from a reach perspective, we cover the entire Southeast from Texas to Florida, all the way to South Carolina and below. We're also in the Midwest, which includes, you know, North Chicago, Harrisburg, Illinois. So basically within that Illinois market. And then, as I mentioned, we are working in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and we are pursuing projects in Nassau, Bahamas.
Wow. That is truly, truly incredible. And here you are, the CEO on my very new, not even launched yet podcast. Thanks so much, Dean, for being here. So how did you grow this firm?
I think that we did a few things right. So one of the things that I decided early on that I wasn't going to take on any debt as part of growing the company. And by me not taking on any debt, it always left me in a position where I was free to make decisions that was in the best interest of the company and the best interest of our long-term strategy. The second thing that we did is we decided to have a niche market versus going after everything that's out there, every opportunity. We decided that we wanted to focus on communities that had the greatest need and that would really appreciate the services and the value that we bring to the table. And so our focus became on tier 2 and tier 3 communities. And by doing that, we began to fill a much needed void within those communities, meaning that many of those communities have not executed projects, haven't built anything in decades. And so they don't have the technical expertise to do it correctly. And so when they recognize that and they realize this is an opportunity for them to actually have a project that they can execute quickly, they can mitigate risk by being able to get a GMP, guaranteed maximum price, early in the process, I think that that story just began to spread like wildfire. And so we began to get a lot of referrals and recommendations. We don't really run advertisements. So everything we do is relationship oriented. And we really respect those relationships and appreciate those relationships. And I think just having been in that relationship business, treating everyone fairly, and standing by our word, doing what we say we're going to do, I think has contributed greatly to our success.
That's so awesome. So you're not like looking for projects. They're coming to you at this point.
Yeah, they're pretty much coming to us. We are probably about 95% negotiated work, and maybe 5% of the time we will respond to an RFP. But typically when we respond to an RFP, it's because it's required by statute and we can't negotiate, but we only pursue projects where we have developed relationships.
Okay. Very, very awesome. And was there a reason that you chose this niche of the sort of smaller underserved communities?
Well, I think because I can relate to those communities. You know, I grew up in a rural Mississippi Delta town that lacked a lot of the essentialities that you find in more urban markets. And I can appreciate those needs and the desires and wants of the citizens of those communities, right? Because even though you're in a smaller community, there are certain things you still want regardless, right? And so as I started out saying earlier, you know, our projects aren't the sexy projects, right? We're not giving you the casinos and the high-rise buildings. But what we do recognize that in all of these communities, they want public safety, right? They want to be protected from crime. They want to be protected from fire. They want access to affordable and decent health care. They want to be able to bury their families in dignity. So these type of projects are critical to the lifeline of these communities. And so I think that that's part of the success story that we have, is that we're going into communities where then the health departments, the health department that's charged with maintaining the health and safety of the public, there's mold and mildew. It's raining within those facilities. Employees have been getting sick for years in those facilities, and they still go nurture themselves back to health and go back and go to work again in those same facilities. And so being able to come into communities and take those facilities offline and show communities how you can leverage your resources to get your facilities and infrastructure brought up to 21st century standards, I think it's been a very, very beautiful story that we tell, but also I think it's a big part of why we are in such high demand.
That's really awesome that you have such a clear kind of mission and niche. And would you say that's more or less profitable from, you know, doing these smaller projects?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
I think it's probably equally profitable. I think I mentioned to you, we talked earlier that we have projects that we have actually signed agreements on and been under construction in 75 days, 70 days, 85 days, 117 days. So the developers that are chasing the larger projects, it's taking them years to get those projects under construction. So while I don't knock their decision and their business model, we'll do the same volume in a shorter amount of time, and we have a greater impact on communities around the country. And so I think that I call it doing good by doing good, right? We make very reasonable fees. We run a very successful company. And I think that we are, at the same time, we're filling a void that's much needed within this country right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you told me before we started recording that you grew up in a real estate family. Is that right?
No, not a real estate family. The only really knowledge I had of real estate was I had an uncle that he wanted to be in real estate. I mean, he's a retired principal. And after he retired, he wanted to get into affordable housing. And he actually would take me to meetings with him when I was in college. And it was those meetings that inspired me to ultimately go to real estate school and get licensed and begin a career in real estate, because I wanted to know more actual technical knowledge about what he was taking me to meetings and they were talking about.
That's awesome. And I know we spoke earlier about your expertise with the capital bond markets. Can you
speak about that, because you're obviously able to get these very favorable financing mechanisms. And how do you do that? What are they?
Well, essentially what we do on our projects, which are design, build, finance, we deliver our projects typically with a tax-exempt lease purchase agreement. We then take that agreement using our investment banker and our bond attorneys and all of our other legal resources. We take those tax-exempt lease purchase agreements and create certificates of participations out of them, or debt certificates, and we sell those into the capital markets as municipal bonds. So essentially, we take projects and create tax-exempt municipal bonds out of those projects. We also do, you know, taxable bond issues as well. And so what that does is, unlike a commercial banker or commercial developer who goes to a commercial banker for a loan and they're paying 6 and 7%, we're able to access the capital markets. And so that allows us to access low interest, long term fixed rate financing. And so our rates are in the right now running in the high 1 percentile range to low 2s on most credit investment grade transactions.
Awesome. And so does that sort of set you apart from the competition, or how does that help your business model?
Yeah, absolutely. It set us apart from the competition in that, number one, we have unlimited access to capital because every project stands on its own 2 feet. We're working with one jurisdiction or municipality. Their project has nothing to do with whether another municipality can get their project. So it gives us unlimited access to capital. It also allows us to execute projects at a much more expedited pace. It allows us to give a much lower interest rate, which is going to be competitive to what that municipality or county or agency could get if they went to the bond market on their own. Also, our structure typically does not require a public referendum, which also saves time and money on these public transactions. Because we're using a tax-exempt lease purchase agreement, typically whatever requirement that exists for the agency to enter into a lease agreement, that's the statutes or laws that we have to comply with in order to execute our transactions. And so at the end of that lease agreement, that project is either donated or deeded to the agency through a lease purchase agreement.
Okay, awesome. So I got to ask, Dee, what is the most challenging thing that you have to deal with on a somewhat regular basis as a developer of these types of projects?
Well, I think the most challenging thing that we have to do is really get a solid GMP on the projects, because we're exercising our ability to execute at a very, very rapid pace. And that's important to communities, especially now when construction costs is escalating in excess of inflation. So I think the most challenging piece of that is making sure that our general contractor and our design team are constantly collaborating on design decisions so that the pricing that we are creating that's going to ultimately compose that GMP, that gross maximum price, that we don't lose the control of that number. And so that's a very, very interactive process, even if you had 6, 7, 8 months to do a design. So when you condense that down to having to execute that design and stay within that budget in a very, very short period of time, then it becomes a very challenging feat, which we do, you know, day in and day out. But I would say that's probably the most challenging piece of what we do.
Awesome. And then does that sometimes work out and sometimes not work out so well? Or do you typically manage to get it right? Or
No, we tend to get it right every time. Knock on wood on that. But we tend to get it right because when we're developing GMPs, we put in contingencies and we put dollars in for unknown variables. And so we do have some, you know, room for error. And so we have always been successful in that arena.
Awesome. Well, and how did you decide to get into, I mean, what did your parents do? How did you decide to get into real estate aside from your uncle taking you to these meetings?
My mom was a licensed practical nurse for most of my life, my childhood life. And I want to say when I got to high school, she had gone back and became a registered nurse. And so I never had a relationship with my father. And my grandfather was just a retired mill worker that had maybe third grade education. So I never really had anyone within my family that I could look at and say, hey, you know, I want to be like this person. You know, it was just, I always had this drive in me to want to be something more than what my surroundings were. So when I had that opportunity to go to meetings with my uncle and I would put on, you know, my slacks and my shirt and tie, I just knew that, hey, I think there's something here. I don't know whether what he's trying to do is necessarily it, but I think that if I learn more, I could potentially be successful in this area. And that was just my thought process as a 19, 20-year-old young man. And I just decided to go to school, get my license, learn more about real estate, and take my own approach at trying to be successful at it. But never, you know, in my lifetime, for going and doing P3s with the Navy and the Army Corps of Engineers and Fish and Wildlife and a number of other agencies, I never imagined being in this space, and definitely never imagined being able to create municipal bonds, being able to design, build, and finance, you know, public safety facilities. And like I say, when people think about real estate developers, most people don't think about those sorts of projects being developer-driven projects. But the reality is that it's something that has taken off around the country, and people and agencies realize that this is a really good way of getting projects done quickly and efficiently, and actually getting these projects up and running, and getting at least one or two projects behind us. And what we see is that a municipality may not want to do every project in their city like this, but they may have a project that, hey, we need to get this project done, and we recognize that this is a win for the community. And so a P3 approach is the way to go.
Awesome. Well, Dee, you clearly made an amazing career and life for yourself. What do you attribute your success to?
Well, I think it's a few things. I think that number one, just hard work, being consistent, not giving up, you know, staying at it. I think that most people who want to be in business for themselves, I think the biggest challenge they have in terms of being able to be really successful is that when they start experiencing those bumps in the road and things are not going as they plan, they give up and maybe change course. And I think that being, you know, developing a plan, I developed a long-term plan, which I'm still implementing. And I started executing that plan. And every day I work to refine that plan. And I'm consistent and deliberate in operating a company, not just based on the dollars at the end of the day, but also, are we doing from a corporate social responsibility perspective? Are we accomplishing our goals? Are we having the impacts within the communities that we're trying to serve? And so being able to stay deliberate about goals and processes and missions, and developing a team around you that buy into the same philosophy and missions that you have established, I think have been critical, because you can't do this by yourself. This is not a one-man show. It requires all of my team members, employees, subcontractors, you know, all lawyers, everybody that, you know, that work day in and day out to make this operation a success.
Awesome. Well, that is just amazing. You're my hero. Dee, thank you so much for coming on. Absolutely.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Please go ahead and tell the listeners how they can get in touch with you, learn about what you're doing, and anything else you'd like to share.
Sure. So if you want to reach me, our web address is thep3groupinc.com. My personal web address is dbrownceo.com. And if you want to listen to my podcast, you can go to any of the streaming podcast stations and type in Sky's the Limit, D Brown, or D Brown Forbes, and you should be able to pull me up. And again, I appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Well, it was really great meeting you, Dee. We'll have to have you on again soon, see what you're up to and next time around. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And good luck with your new podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com. For tons of free educational content to further your success.